I've been wanting to share something I read a couple months ago, or over this last couple months, and maybe I think this is the time to share that in my reflection on how we can practice with that. Actually, some of that already came out through your check-in. When this pandemic started, there is this article written by a New York Times op-ed writer, David Brooks, who talked about the moral meaning of the plague. When everyone was just sort of scared about the plague, it's like, this is the time for us to really look inside, to contemplate the meaning of our life as we go through this. And then I also have the good fortune of listening to this wonderful interview with Joanna Macy that Dave mentioned. And she talked about her work of dealing with the uncertainty, especially that brought by climate change. But actually, it's the same. Everything's up. We don't know what's going on. The economy. No one knows about the future of their job, even for professors who are tenured. No one's job is safe. No industry is safe. And all the uncertainty. And Joanna Macy talked about this practice of what she called the great turning to life-sustaining culture. She talked about the society doing it together, then it becomes a new culture. Of course, it really is done by every one of us engaging in the practice of making moment-to-moment choices that will contribute to life-sustaining culture. And she talked about the four R's, so I want to share that with you. I find it very helpful for contemplation and reflection. The first R is what she called resilience. Resilience. And what she meant was by actually the practice of identifying values we want to keep. Or in other words, identifying what's important for us. As Awa mentioned, how this period of having time for ourselves give us the opportunity to really reflect on what's important, what's really dear to our heart, so that we will be able to direct our moment-to-moment thoughts and actions in order to keep these values. Last time it was brought up in the check-in about the many inequities, injustice in the world. And if these are our values, what have we done to uphold them? So there may be these values that we find equality or justice or democracy being important. And perhaps there are many talks about us all being in this together, that recognizing our shared humanity, pointing to the value of compassion, and allowing ourselves to maybe really think deeply what that means and how we can actualize this value. Compassion has to do with refraining from causing harm and committing to bringing benefit to all sentient beings that's informed by wisdom. And when Joanna Macy talked about it, she talked about this compassion as in a way that's opening our heart. So we start with practicing, cultivating compassion and kindness towards those around us, our family members, for example. And she cited this poem that I resonated with greatly. I want to share it with you, the first half of it. She translated this poem from, I believe, German, called Widening Circles by Rainier Maria Rilke. The first two lines, the first part of the poem reads like this. I live my life in widening circles that reach out across the world, from our family, out, all the way to those we never met. I may not complete this last one meaning wherever, whichever one that we are working on, but I give myself to it. Do our best, give it our best effort. And what would that effort involve? That is part of the practice of cultivating compassion. We have talked about it a number of times. That would involve not turning away from suffering, which we're so tempted to do, so easy to do, because it's so much more pleasant to do. When there are all this inequality and administrative, you can say, failure or problem, the most concrete thing, such as these personal protective equipments that should have gone to all the healthcare workers, and many of them are working without them, we can forget about it or not read about it, not care about it, because it's too aggravating. Or remember the practice of not turning away. When we don't turn away, we have an opportunity to notice the opportunity, the chance for us to do something. And that will also involve maintaining and cultivating this awareness of all kinds of suffering. The pandemic is what we talked about all the time, but there are other things that are still going on. Other things are still going on. I just read about today how, because of the pandemic, vaccination programs in some countries are halted. There'll be 80 million children who will die from preventable diseases. The oppression of marginalized people in the United States and across the world is still going on. The Rohingyas, the Uyghurs. And what just happened? What's going to happen to the people of my hometown in Hong Kong? And also read about the victims of war in Yemen, whose healthcare system collapsed because of the war. So easy to be tempted to not think about them, because we perhaps feel so helpless and overwhelmed by all the suffering. And the other day I read about a story of a nurse in Brooklyn, whose family mostly lived in Trinidad, and she kept going to work and died from the coronavirus alone, without any of her family. And so, not turning away from all the sufferings out there, and remembering the humanity of everyone, everyone. That's very difficult to do, because our urge is to give rise to hatred to those we believe are the bad people, those who are doing the bad things, wrong things, So the cultivation of clear awareness is to recognize, notice these very strong urges to succumb to the entrenched habit of giving rise to hatred. And instead, practice using our witnessing. We're bearing witness instead of turning away. We bear witness to the many outrageous actions happening in the world to strengthen our resolve. So it is not a passive feel-good practice that we're engaging in. This reminds me of when I started attending 7-day intensive retreats in the 90s with Master Shen Yin. One of the supporting practice that he always talked about in the evening lectures is what he called giving rise to angry determination. Angry determination, which is different from hatred. We're not talking about hatred. Determination is this resolve, commitment that we are talking about. What is this angry determination? Determination to commit to the practice so that we can have this stable, clear mind of compassion. To be part of the solution of all kinds of suffering and atrocities happening all around the world so that we can resist the temptation to turn away, to forget about compassion. So it's part of this resolve that is strengthened through our commitment to bearing witness, to keep paying attention, to stay engaged. Sometimes there may not be very much we can do besides paying attention, but paying attention is a lot. You're not ignoring it. You understand what's actually happening, so you know what it is that maybe you can do. You may be able to initiate doing something, or staying engaged will allow you to recognize when someone initiated something that you can support it instead of ignoring it. Not to lose heart, not to become hopeless or cynical. So easy to do. And to also commit to cultivating this clarity, this clear awareness of all forms of dehumanizing actions, which is so very easy to participate in when we identify someone as the bad people. We start developing these dehumanizing thoughts about them. And that will allow us to remember that our world is changed for the better by our thoughts and actions collectively, not just by a change of leaders. We have this fantasy thinking that if someone just disappears, someone just go away, then everything will be fine. If you ever thought like, oh, just you wish yours one of your troublemaking coworker would just go away, then everything will be fine. And I invite you to remember if everything is actually fine, perfect from then on. Because our world is co-created by all of us. If our thoughts and actions don't change, they will just show up in other ways. In fact, what we think of as the problematic actions of leaders, not just their action, they are enabled by a system supported by many people. They are just a manifestation of many, many causes and conditions. We are part of it. We don't know how we are playing a part, but we are part of it. And to commit to also remembering that the perpetrators of cruel actions, they also are suffering. They're suffering from their craving, hatred, and delusion. When we notice how people suffer, they cause suffering in others. That's exactly what's happening. They too are suffering, and so pitiable. Pitiable. They deserve our pity, not hatred. Of course, it does not mean that we agree with these people, that we start supporting them. And compassion would mean actually that we reduce or limit their ability to continue to do more harm. What can we do with wisdom and compassion? So sometimes it may mean calling out what they're doing instead of remaining silent. It's so easy to think that, what's the point? You know, they have so much power. What will be me saying something do? Well, if 10,000 people calls out, then it will not be silence. Even 10 people, even 5 people. And for those of us who are fortunate enough to live in a democracy, maybe to vote such people out. And sometimes it will involve the wisdom of staying out of harm's way so that we are limiting the ability of these people to do harm, including to ourselves. Think about, for example, racism or other kind of violence. So you can see that with people, even though they are the perpetrator of unjust, cruel actions, we can use our wisdom to cultivate compassion. And even in our action of trying to limit and reduce their ability to do harm, it's not driven by hatred, but by compassion. That's the result that I'm talking about. Very difficult because our culture pushes us the opposite direction. The second R that Joanna Macy talked about, what she called relinquishment. Relinquishment is to reflect on and identify what to let go of. What to let go of. Thank you so much, Awa, for sharing your practice experience that during this period of staying away from many distractions that's offered to us in our very consumerist society that require us to run out, like do this, do that, eat at this restaurant, go shopping here and all that stuff, go do vacation here. And we are not allowed to do that. And in fact, we're constantly in the first few weeks of this lockdown, we were reminded of what's essential and what's non-essential. These are essential services. What are they? Groceries. What are the non-essential services, in case you haven't been paying attention? Everything that's in the mall. I live very close to a big mall in New Jersey. It's been closed. So it's very, like, I always knew it's not essential. Now it's like publicly announced that it's not essential. Like, there's never been such clarity in a consumerist culture, what is essential and what is non-essential. So we should feel very blessed by this clarity, and which allow us to reflect on many unhealthy habits that we have, that we can let go of, that we have been maybe just allowing to be perpetuated over the years, being encouraged by our culture, conditioned by our society, growing up in this consumerist culture, that we can reflect on these unhealthy habits and maybe not return to them, relinquish them. So you may have your list. You may have, maybe I offer some possible candidates based on some of the things I've been reading. Mindless consumption. Most of the things that's happening in some of these shopping places now, which is not possible, it's designed to make you go in and buy things that you didn't think that you need. And then you end up with things that you don't know why you bought. And so mindless consumption. Wasteful habits. Remember when you don't need to worry about whether there's toilet paper and other paper products in the store? I don't know what you have done in this period, but perhaps you might have to pay a little bit more attention to whether you have enough food in your pantry. Maybe I should not just throw that away or pour away that almost full glass of juice or milk that I just didn't finish because my grocery store only allowed me to buy 2 cartons of milk each trip. So some scarcity has been good for us to learn not to be so mindlessly wasteful. And some other mindless things that we've been engaging in our consumers' culture has encouraged, for example, some habits of mindless vacationing. Every time there's this long weekend, I have to like drive really far and fly somewhere to do some vacation, which leaves me more tired, and I have to come home and meet another vacation from that vacation. And meanwhile, we generated a lot of CO2 emissions and all that stuff. And I read this article today talking about, you can just camp in your backyard if you have one. And just a shift in perspective, it feels like you've been away. Zero CO2 emission. I'm not campaigning against vacation, but reflect on our habits of mindless vacation. Maybe also mindless workaholism. Perhaps before this, many people who have a very compartmentalized work and family life. Right? You go to work like crazy all the time, and then someone's given the job of looking after something at home, maybe like childcare center, or someone that come and do some cleaning, or you outsource all the cooking, because you get restaurant takeout, whatever it is, right? That we have compartmentalized our life, which is no longer possible during this lockdown. And when they all together, we recognize how this unhelpful attitude of overstriving has been done at the expense of our loved ones all these times. So I'm not talking about quitting your job. That's not what I'm saying. But mindless workaholism. When maybe I've done enough today, I need to go home and be with my family, rather than hours and hours and hours. And things are never done. Things in office are never done. And perhaps related to that is this mindless pursuit for status. Many people who don't need to go to work and also don't need to keep up with the Joneses with their colleagues, and all just getting on Zoom meetings in their sweatpants or something, suddenly realize that all that was a little bit silly, maybe. So thinking about what you can let go of. And the third R, she talked about restoration. Maybe many of you have also been reflecting on that. What to bring back from the past? She talked about it in her own context, but think about all the things that we have forgotten to do that are actually wonderful. Maybe we have forgotten to do because of all these technology. Remember the things that you used to do before your phone, before the smartphone? Remember that? For example, people were talking about actually talking on the phone, like not the text, but actually talking to someone on the phone. That is so new, because it actually allows us to connect better. Of course, like if you can go and actually talk to someone living nearby with 6 feet apart, that is also wonderful. Reconnect with your neighbors. And maybe family time. You actually have time at home. Being able to do the happy and happy sharing. That is so wonderful. Being able to share your day, which very few American families do anymore because of their very busy work life. Or forgotten hobbies or things that brought you joy and happiness and peace that you used to do. Maybe painting, maybe playing music, maybe reading great work of literature. My husband is reading War and Peace. That's just wonderful thing that you kept telling you, I don't have time to do, because you're busy looking at your phone all the time. And for me, I reconnected with chanting practice. Reconnecting with time spent with nature. We go visit this little pond with these tadpoles every few days. That's all free, you know, you don't need to make more money to do that. And maybe reconnecting with friends that we just kept telling ourselves that we don't have time for, other human beings. So this restoration has to do with identifying things that you would like to bring back to make your life more meaningful, more fulfilled, and integrate it into your life. Integrate it. And lastly, she talked about reconciliation. With whom do we want to make peace? With whom do we want to make peace? This is very important. This period, we have gone through a lot, and we are able to witness how easy it is to inflict harm on our loved ones when we are stressed out and irritated. And perhaps we can make peace with our past self who have done things to hurt someone we love. Because we were suffering. And we have been beating ourselves up. No peace. Make peace. Make peace with our self. When we are able to make peace with this person we've been beating up, this person who made the mistake of hurting someone we love because we were hurting. We are also committing to not to repeat that by remembering to practice. So for example, we shared how when we remember to practice, stay with the practice, we are more capable of not inflicting harm on others because we are not suffering as much with more clarity. And perhaps also make peace with other people who have hurt us in the past. People we can see so clearly how when we are under stress, suffer, and we do unwise things, unkind things, say cruel things that hurt other people, including us. So when we can see how we do that, we also see other people doing that. And yes, it has hurt us. So we're not pretending that that didn't happen, but we make peace with that person. Now, that means that all the sort of maybe resentment or hatred, or sometimes maybe blaming ourselves for what that person is doing, wishing, trying to change the past, wishing that it were different. All that is what caused agitation in the mind, no peace. Making peace with that. Now, it does not mean that you go and become best friend with that person. Maybe you don't have that relationship with that person anymore. But the non-peaceful relationship we have with that person is your idea of that person who had hurt you. Make peace with that. So I hope all or some of these 4 R's, resilience, relinquishment, restoration, and reconciliation, will serve as some guideline for your reflection. Make good use of this time, this period of self-isolation, and learn from it. And we will definitely have a better life after this, regardless of what happens, regardless what happens to our job, regardless to what happened in the economy. We will be able to cultivate a wisdom and compassion and bring benefits to others in the way we can.